I'm Michael Emanatic.
I'm Michael.
Thank you, Stephen, for asking me to share, and thank you so much, Sarah, for your share. Stephen first, he had called me twice, and I was in a meeting, and then he had texted me and asked if I would share in Trafalgar Square, and I immediately said yes, as I often do. But then I thought I would ask a few questions, and I said, is this the speaker meeting? Blah, blah, blah. And I was waiting for the response, and I was like, please don't be the 40-minute share. Please don't be the 40-minute share. And I was actually with my sponsor. We went to a meeting here on Saturday, and I got the response, and I looked at him like, oh, it's the 40-minute share. But you know what? That's all right. I have a lot to say. What can I say? I was reflecting today my journey in recovery, and as I often do before I do a share, and I was filled with immense gratitude for the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and where I am today. I mean, to be honest, I would definitely be dead. There's no doubt about that. You know, my life has changed in ways that I could have never imagined. And sometimes I look at the person I am and the person I was, and it's just two completely different animals. And when I say animal, when I was using, I was feral. I was homeless, living on the street, and feral. And I'll just walk you through my journey. So I started using when I was 13, and I grew up in a household that was quite chaotic. My stepfather was not very nice when he drank, and there was drugs in the house, there was abuse, sexual abuse, and it was... So I learned that to get out of yourself, that using was a good way to do it. So I started very early, and it progressed quite quickly. By the time I was 18, I had my first overdose, and it scared the crap out of me, and it scared my mother. And my uncle, I'm from the U.S., and my uncle was a Marine, a career Marine. And my mother said, maybe you should follow in your uncle's footsteps. And I said, anything other than that, what just happened, you know? So I joined the Marine Corps thinking that it would fix me. I was lost. I'm gonna tell you, by the time I was 18, I was completely lost. I had no idea where I was going, who I was, or what I was doing. I didn't know myself. I didn't understand what I was going through, the feelings I was going through, my sexuality. Like, everything was very confusing, and I thought the Marine Corps would fix it. And I joined, and I did quite well, to be honest. I got up to sergeant, to be honest, in 4 years, and I enjoyed it. But it didn't stop me from using. I didn't use drugs, but I drank. And the minute I got out of the Marine Corps, I picked up where I left off on the drug path and just continued. I was just really confused. And I met a woman and we got married, and I had a son when I was 20 and my daughter when I was 22. After I got out of the Marine Corps, We ended up getting a divorce, and it just continued. And the thing is, my when I was using it, the reasons I used changed. So in the beginning, it was because I thought it was a way out of the chaos. And then there was a moment when it was really fun. And then there was a moment when I couldn't stop, no matter what. See, I knew my life was unmanageable. But I did not get the second part of the first step. I was not powerless over drugs. I felt. You know, I can continue to use, I thought, even though they weren't working, even though I was losing everything. You know, I lost my job, I was homeless, I lost connections with my family, I lost my car. You know, I just kept losing. What it was I was with these people, in the further I got into my addiction, like, I always thought I was better than the people I was using with. I always thought I was better because I had something that they didn't. But eventually I was just, you know, I was just like, I was right where they were. The only thing that wasn't happening to me, you know, is jails, institutions, and death. For me, I had three overdoses in my using, and one was very close to death. I mean, they had to revive me. And I was in a lot of institutions. I never went to jail, but I mean, definitely a yet. I mean, to be honest with you, I got lucky. I just got lucky. That's the reality. I was blessed. So anyways, I'll just, I have 40 minutes, so I'm trying to fill up some of it, but I yeah, I just kept using, and it just kept getting worse. And what happened is, my poor children, I put them through hell, I'll be honest with you. Like, we were divorced, and I was, you know, I would have them 6 months of the year, and they were afraid of me. They didn't know what was going on. In the end, I was psychotic. I was talking, I was babbling. I would leave them alone in the house for two or three days by themselves. I'm not proud of that, but you know what? I've had an opportunity to repair those relationships, and I'll talk about that. You know, and in my addiction, I this is part of my story, and I'll weave it in, you know, as part of the journey, but I contracted HIV, and I was so ashamed. I didn't even acknowledge it in myself. Like, I could not acknowledge that was a part of me. I just, you know, I couldn't say it out loud. It was just so much shame. And so by the time I got clean, my son was 18 and my daughter was 16. I, like I said, I was homeless. I had lost everything. Let me tell this part. So what had happened was, the last time I used was the 15th of February, 2003. And I used, and I found myself in a squat with my one suitcase of clothes in the corner in a dark room crying. That is where it left me. And I still had my car at that point. I hadn't paid. By the time I got in recovery, I had filed bankruptcy twice. I hadn't paid for the car note for months. And I was living in San Francisco, and I used to, for 2 years prior to getting clean, I used to drive to LA thinking that I couldn't get clean in San Francisco. So I did it many times in a psychotic state, like pulling over to get gas and like fighting with people because they were following me, which wasn't true. But you know, I was up and down the coast. And so that last night I used, I was crying. I got my suitcase, I put it in my car, and I got 50 miles outside of San Francisco, and I said, screw it. I didn't say that, but I said, screw it. And I did a U-turn, and I came back, and I went to a hospital that had seen me many, many times. And I had said, I need help. And they had heard that many, many times. But for some reason, I was truly blessed, and they heard it. And so they put me in a psych ward for 3 days because I was completely psychotic, like babbling. And then they set me up with a treatment center who I had blown off many times. And they said, if he doesn't come this time, he's not coming. So they put me in an ambulance and they drove me to the treatment center. And so that was the start of my journey. So it was 12-step based. And so what they did is they took us to AA. And, you know, so I continued that for a while. And I don't know, I got clean in San Francisco. And I don't know if I was just picking up the differences and not listening for the similarities, but what I felt like in San Francisco was there's a lot of addicts in AA in San Francisco. And I was really struggling. My first year was hard. I'm telling you, it was hard. I wanted to use every day, every single day, but I just sat. I came to meetings every day. Came to meetings every day for at least 7 years of my recovery, first 7 years of my recovery. And there were times where I literally would hold on to the seat because I could not sometimes hear what people were saying. I would be so triggered, you know, with their honesty. Like someone would get up and share that they had HIV and I would be like, it would just like take the breath out of me. I couldn't fathom being that honest. But a year in, what I was seeing is people getting 90 days on Friday and coming back on Monday a newcomer. And I started thinking, oh, I can do that? And then I got a cold. And so again, you know, the storm was brewing. I didn't feel well. My thinking was off. And I said to a friend of mine who had 7 years of recovery, but he had relapsed, so he was a newcomer with me. So he was in 7 years before me, and but I only knew him as a newcomer. And I said, it's a done deal, I'm using. And he said, you should come to NA with me. And I went to an NA meeting, and I never looked back. I'm being very honest. The obsession to use was lifted. And and I never looked back. I got into service, I worked steps, I started sponsoring people, and the steps have changed my life. I mean, it's not been easy. It's been a lot of hard work. And, you know, like, I didn't have a concept of a higher power when I got here. And I still didn't when I was 2 years clean. You know, my sponsor said, fake it till you make it, and that's what I did. And, you know, my concept of a higher power now is not the same one that it was when I was 2 years clean, when I was 10 years clean, and when I was 15 years clean. It changes, and I'm okay with that. And so I did my first four step, and I did pages and pages and pages and pages. And I sat with my sponsor and I read it, and he said, you didn't put one thing in there about sex. I couldn't. I don't know if it was a block or if it was intentional. I don't remember. But he said, you need to go back and do that part. I mean, look, I'm not recovered in that area, but I sure am a lot farther away than I was when I was a year clean, 100%. I just kept working the steps and I finally saw, interestingly enough, I finally saw when I moved to San Francisco, I was already deep into my addiction, well deep into my addiction. And by the time I got there, my role was this small. And, you know, as I continued to get clean, I was like, wow, this is a beautiful city. Like, you get to see, like, you see the world for what it is. And, you know, as I continued doing my sixth and seventh step, and I started changing my perspective on life and how I reacted to things and how I acted and how I treated people, my world got bigger. And it was still small, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it took me It took me a year to get a job. I had, like I said, I had filed two bankruptcies. So I was thousands, 20, 30,000 in debt that I had to deal with as part of my ninth step. And so my world was opening up and things were looking brighter. And, you know, I got a home group and I started to get to know people. And I'll say this, like, so I couldn't touch people. Like when I first got clean, I really struggled with the hugs. You know, I was like this, and I was about, I think it was about 5 years clean. And I shared in my home group that exactly what I just said. And that's not something you share in your home group if you don't want to be hugged, because I got some hugs and now I love hugs. Like I'm in for it. Right. So I go for it. So I got to the ninth step. I was desperate. I worked my first round of steps within 18 months of my recovery. I was so desperate. And I made an amends to my children, and my daughter leaned in. She was ready for it. She was desperate for my love. My son pushed me away. He said, he sent me an email, and I was like, it was so rotten and so bad. I was like, who hacked my son's email? Like, I couldn't imagine him saying what I got. And then when it sunk in, I was at work, and when I got it, and I had to leave, and I went to my sponsor, and I was crying. I felt like an idiot. Like, I was sitting in a coffee shop and I was just crying for hours. And, you know, my son and I didn't talk for 5 years after that. But I continued to love him. I sent him letters. He wouldn't take my call. I sent letters. I reached out. I didn't have any expectations. I just prayed for his well-being and, you know, that he got what he needed in life. And that was the best I could do. And, you know, like when I was just focusing a bit on the ninth step more, like I had to make the financial amends. So I literally put, my sponsor helped me put together like a, a budget. And, you know, and I was calling people and saying, I can't do this. This is my situation. I can do this. I can do 20 a month. And they were agreeing with me. And you know, eventually I got out of debt and I got a little credit card and, you know, with £200. And now I have credit. You know, it took years and years of diligent hard work of, you know, and sometimes I didn't want to give the money, but it was part of my amends process. I had to give the money. I made the commitment. And also, so one of my jobs, where am I?
I'm good. 20 minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. I got a lot. So one of my jobs was, I worked at an HIV clinic and, I was so not in love with myself that I was stealing steroids from the clinic. And because I thought when I was using, that if I looked good, you would love me. That's what I thought. And, you know, I pondered with my sponsor for probably a year, like, how do we do this? And I said, you know what, the clinic was in Los Angeles. I said, you know, I'm just going to get on a plane. I'm just going to do it. If I go to jail, I go to jail. It is what it is. And I showed up and I said, this is what's going on. This is what happened. I was using and, We sat down and we figured out how much in financial compensation it would be, And it came out to about $2,000 worth. And he said, just donate it to an HIV charity. So, you know, over a few years, I did that. And so, you know, there are ways to make amends, and there's a way, but again, I didn't just do that on my own. I just didn't get on a plane and go to LA and say that, you know, I was stealing drugs from your clinic, from people who needed it. I met with my sponsor, and I made a conscious decision to live with the consequences. And, you know, and I think, you know, the 10th and 11th step, you know, early in recovery, I just didn't quite get it. It was kind of, like 10th step was work. I'll be honest with you. Like, I worked the steps every day in my life, at least one, somehow, some way. But a formal 10th step, that's the one that I struggle with. Like, I just don't do that every day. I do it when the shit hits the fan. Like, when I'm in trouble, I will do a formal 10th step every day. But when life is good, that's the one thing I don't. But I have found that doing meditation every day, especially in the morning before I go to work, where all my triggers, like, I'm just triggered by everything and everyone. I mean, it's not that people are doing anything to me, but by the time I get there, my head is saying that they're doing everything to me. So, you know, if I just kind of just take a step back and just clear my head before I start my day, I feel like my life is much better and more serene. You know, I feel like I have a chance. And then the 12th step, love the 12th step, love the 12th step. So here's the thing. Practice these principles on all my affairs. When I came in recovery, I started using when I was 13. I didn't know how to live life. I had no clue, none, zero, zip. And everything that I do today is based in recovery. So it's based on something that I learned here by doing the steps, by doing service, by sponsoring, by having a sponsor who has a sponsor in Narcotics Anonymous. And so, you know, I at least have a chance, and then I get to give it away. Right? I get to share what I've learned, and I get to see people grow, and it's very exciting when people are working the steps. You know, I have five sponsees who are active in the steps, and I get to see them change and grow. And you know, there's a saying that says the newcomer is the most important person in the room, but there's a reason for that, and it's because So the newcomer is important because you have to be here so I can give it away, so I can stay clean. That's the reason. And also, I get to see what it's like, because I don't want to go back to that space. I don't want to be feral and homeless and broke. Like, I remember what that's like, and it's not fun. So about 7 years ago, I was in an airport in Germany, and I got a call from my sister, and she had said that she had breast cancer, and I was floored, because my sister, of all the people, like my stepfather told, one time my stepfather told my mother, said, the next time we see that boy, he's going to be in a box. So they had, like, kind of my parents, my stepmom, and my stepdad and my mom had, and stepmom and dad, was this all messy stuff. But they had, like, pulled away from me because I was so toxic. I was taking. And so they kind of, like, you know, was in. You know, protection mode. My sister never left my side. She did, even when I was homeless. She wasn't there physically, but I, you know, if I needed someone, if I was so mental and crazy, and I needed someone to talk me out of it, so that I, like, if I really, really, really thought that car crash happened because something I did yesterday, I needed to call my sister because she could talk me out of it. She's the one that could say, that's not real. So she got treatment, she got better, and I was walking to my home group, Notting Hill, Saturday night. I had moved here 10 years ago, so let me just backtrack. So remember when I said I was living in San Francisco, my life was getting bigger, but it was still small. So my company, I was flying back and forth to London, My father's Scottish, so I have a passport, and I'm a US citizen. And they asked me to move here, and I said, oh, hell no, I can't leave like my home group and blah, blah. And my sponsor said, you got 9 years clean. You need to expand your world. You need to have a bit of faith. And he said, if it doesn't work out, you can always come back. So on faith, I moved here, and you know, and so my life continues to grow and open up. But I was living here when my sister called me. I was flying back and forth when she was in treatment. And at the same time, my mother, who, I love my mother. I mean, it took me years. I could, even after I could hug you guys in the meetings, I still could not hug my mother. I couldn't. I couldn't touch her. And there was no reason, I was angry and resentful that she didn't protect me. But what happened was, she got an infection and went in the hospital in isolation. My sister was going through chemo, she couldn't visit her. So I was calling my mother every day. And I started to form a relationship. And now we hug. And you know, so my sister, I hope I'm not bouncing around, I hope you're following the journey. So my sister, she got better. I was walking to my home group in Notting Hill Saturday night, and she called me and she said, it's back and I have 6 weeks to live. And I mean, I fell into my home group. My sponsor was there. And I mean, I was just crying. Like, I think the meeting wrapped their arms around me, and I don't even remember if we had a meeting. I don't remember much of that night, but they held me. And then we had already planned, my sister and I, a trip to South America. And she said, I think I can go. So I said, okay, I'm gonna go and I'll meet you there. And I went, and then she called and she said, I can't go. Like, I just need to figure out what I'm doing. And so I was stuck in South America, and she's there dying. And I called my sponsor, and he was still on the phone with me for what, at least 4 hours. I was like crying at the pool. So bizarre. But I got on the next flight out, and I was there when she passed. I was holding her hand. And and my mom, she was still having health problems, and I was flying back and forth to help her, and now she's better. And my sponsor came with me and he helped me. I have a step family who I couldn't do a ninth step. I mean, I was probably 15 years clean. They didn't make it on the list. They didn't even make it on the 8-step list. Like, I just, again, another block, just like sex and 4-step, it was a block. And so finally I was doing a round of steps, and they made it on the list. And I said, you know, I gotta fly. They all live in Las Vegas. And I said, I gotta fly to Las Vegas and I gotta do this. And so I was scared. And my stepmother, my father died in 1994, and my stepmother, I was using addict. I had two kids of my own, and then she expected me to father her children. And I was like, that's a high expectation, like, I'm gonna fail that one. And I did. And she blamed me for it, and she made me, every time we talked, she made sure I knew that I was the worst person in the world. And I carried I carried her stuff for 15 years in recovery. Every time I talked to her, it would come on and I would shrink, and I carried it. And So we went, my sponsor and I, and we did Ninth Step. And then I went and actually did we did the Ninth Step in the green and gold, and then I went and actually did the amends. And when I said to my stepmother, my part, it was gone. All that guilt was gone. And we went to dinner that night, and she started in, and I'm like, that's you. That's on you. That is your shit. I love you, but that is your shit. And the freedom from that. So, a little bit more about that. that was the sound freedom. So a little bit more about the Ninth Step. So I'm just going to go back to a different time. I was 9 years clean. I learned that it was okay to be myself in recovery. And like I said, when I heard people talk about, you know, their sexuality or, you know, things that just made me like cringe and having HIV, I kind of got the courage that it's okay to say that in here. It's safe. And so I still hadn't told my family that I had HIV. I was 9 years clean. And I had been lying to them the whole time. They're like, what's that pill? And I'm like, what's the vitamin? And so I had in my round of steps, I had some truth around that, and I'm like, I just need to get this. So my sponsor said, just practice saying it in meetings, just weave it in a share. I've got HIV. Just weave it in. Keep talking. No one's gonna judge you. And then my family lived in Colorado, my kids, so I went to Colorado, and I went for a few weeks, but I went to meetings first so that I could get a support network, and I got phone numbers, and I went to meetings, and I got a group in case it went south fast. And by this time, my son and I were talking. I was 9 years clean. He started talking to me when I was 5 years clean. We weren't in love. We were slow to build that relationship, slow, but we were talking, and so I said, look, I have to make an amends. This is like my third amends to them for various things, and I said, you know, I've been lying to you all these years. I have HIV. I take medication. Here's some stuff about it. Here's what you need to know. You're safe. I'm safe. Everything's good, and I got love. My son got up, hugged me, and said, I love you, Dad. So, I mean, look, my point is, sometimes the amends go bad, sometimes they go good. I have no expectations, zero. I need to talk about my part. What is my part in this relationship? And let it go. Just let it go. And so lately, you know, I'm trying to control things at work, and there's a situation. I'm doing a four-step, and there's someone at work that's on the four-step, and he triggers everything in me, and I just have to remember not to react, because, like, he'll send an email, and I'll get it at 10 o'clock at night. And what happens is I get an emotional, visceral reaction. Like, my temple starts pounding, my heart starts pounding, I turn red, I get hot from a stupid email. And my response is to fly something back. But because of recovery, I have the power of pause. Like, I can stop. I know that if I do what I think I want to do, that is not going to end well. So just stop. Just delete the email and go to bed. Turn your phone off and have a good night's sleep. Okay, thank you. But that's not without practice, because I have fired off a lot of emails. And I've had to clean up a lot of, trust me, I have 5 minutes, I can't go into it. I had to clean up a lot of shit. a lot. I've replied all and talked about someone in the email who was in the email. Like, it's all there. But I've learned When you get that emotion, when I get that emotional reaction, it is good for me to take a step back, stop, and not do what I think I want to do in that moment, because it will not end well. And because I have recovery, I have a sponsor. Look, sponsor, sponsee is a two-way street. My sponsees ask me how I'm doing. Sometimes I'm having a bad day. I tell them, look, I mean, we share. It's not just them coming to me with their stuff. We build a relationship and we share. So, you know, sometimes I'll get a nice call. Someone will send me a nice text and then call me and say, how are you? In the moment, in the heat of the moment when I'm struggling. And I get to say, I'm really having a hard time. Like, I just want to kill this guy. And then we have a bit of banter. He's like, I'll stab him. And I'm like, no, don't do that. Anyways. Anyways, it's good to be here. I hope I, you know, was able to express my gratitude for Narcotics Anonymous and walk you through my journey of getting and staying clean.